Hello, and welcome to our series, Career Resilience, where we talk with people about their career path and their career journey, and maybe we can all learn from each other. My name is Jan Daniluk, and I'm a human resources professional in London, Ontario, Canada. I work with Fort Keist LLP, and I work with my clients to help them with the HR side of their business. We hope that you will enjoy these discussions with real people about real challenges and real working life situations. Welcome. My guest today is Dr. Chris Niblock. Chris, welcome aboard. This is Career Resilience, and we get to hear all about you.
Thanks for having me, Jen.
Okay. Now, just for context, I'm a Canadian in Ontario, Canada. You're a Brit located in Australia. So that's kind of where we are in the world. From my perspective, you're in tomorrow. And from your perspective, I'm in yesterday.
Yeah, I'm in the future. I'm on Friday morning. It's 10 o'clock, 9 o'clock, in fact. It's 26 degrees in winter. So yeah, it's going to be a nice day.
Well, that's right. You're in winter.
Winter. We call it winter. It's still hot.
So there you are in Australia, and you're from the UK. Do you find the cultures very different or aligned or what?
Very similar. I think that generally it's pretty much just like being in the UK, just with a slightly different accent and different weather. People are generally more friendly and more outgoing than in the UK, which is unusual because the Brits are well known for being quite friendly and polite. But everyone's quite keen to talk to you here, to get to know you.
So, Chris, I really appreciate you chatting with me today about what it's like to be a medical doctor and your path in getting there and the resilience that you've had to have because you've chosen quite a challenging profession. The first thing I wanted to ask you, though, before we get into talking about your career is, as someone who has studied the human body, what is the most amazing thing to you about the human body?
I would say it's the human body's ability to heal itself, most likely. We can see people that come into the emergency department and they really look like they've been through the wars, almost at times unrecognizable as a human, just bits and pieces that shouldn't be in places, faces swollen up, blood everywhere. And then you can see them maybe 6 months down the line. They might come in for a different reason and they just look completely normal, maybe a few cuts and scrapes. But I mean, I'm sure they've been through a tough time in those 6 months trying to heal. But really, it's amazing that people can overcome anything, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. So let's backtrack and let's talk about your career. When did you know you wanted to become a doctor?
I think halfway through my undergraduate degree. So I did an undergraduate degree first in biochemistry, straight out of high school. I then did a master's degree in oncology. Halfway through my bachelor's degree in biochemistry, I became quite fascinated with physiology, how the human body works. I was quite interested at a molecular level about how the human body works, but I guess the subject I was studying was more focused on that and not so focused on how all these small molecular pathways work in the grand scheme of things to make the human body what it is. I guess I was a little bit frustrated that we didn't go into that in more detail. And so it became an interest, but it was something that I wasn't really supposed to be studying because it wouldn't have contributed to my degree. Mm-hmm. So I guess at that point, well, maybe I should be doing something different because I do like biochemistry, but I don't really think it's something that really excites me.
Were you always a math person? Good at that? No?
No, afraid not. kind of we joke sometimes as doctors that maths is the one thing you don't really need to be a doctor. Certainly when you're doing drug calculations, and certainly when children are involved and you have to work things out by their height and age and weight, that's when quick maths and a little bit of mental arithmetic can help. But generally, it's not, math doesn't really come into medicine so much. And that's quite fortunate because I'm hopeless. It was never my strong point. I tried my best to get good grades in maths in school, but I never really, certainly didn't get A levels or higher qualifications in maths, but it didn't hold me back. So mm-hmm. I'm very thankful for that.
I think that that must be an assumption that people have that, but I guess math is different from chemistry and science. And so you were probably a whiz on that side, were you?
Yeah, so science is something I was very interested in. And generally, there's the qualifications that you require, certainly in the UK, I'm not sure if it's the same elsewhere, but in the UK, the entry requirements for medicine, I think the one thing they're really keen on is you have a good qualification in chemistry and biology. Mm-hmm. Maths actually doesn't make up any of the entry requirements for medicine in the UK. And that's very thankful. I'm very thankful for that. I'm very fortunate for me.
Your life would have been entirely different.
Oh, yeah.
So you decided to go in that direction. One of the things that you said before when we were talking about what to chat about, that you felt that resilience for you was overcoming boundaries and during school, early school years, and after when you got out of school. So can you tell me about that, what you mean by that when it comes to resilience?
Yeah, I think that with the model that we have in schools, and certainly in the UK, and I'm sure across the world, you go to school at the age of five in most countries, you progress through all the way through to 18 years old, and you decide to go to college, university, or whether to go straight into the workforce. And I think from that age of five to 18, those 13 years, they really can decide what you do with your career and what happens in your career going forward. And I think that everyone always says you need to pay attention to school, you need to get good grades, otherwise you won't get a good job. And people always tell you that when you're at school, and I think people don't really pay attention, but it really is probably true to some extent. So I was, when I was five, I think I was quite bright. I was always looked at as being one of the brightest in the class. I think I had I think I would look like I was going to progress and become someone who was always going to do well in school. And I think that like a lot of kids, after about got into about 10 years old, 12 years old, and I probably just became a bit naughty and hanging around with the wrong kind of kids, not really paying attention to school, kind of just messing around in class, always in detention, getting caught smoking, generally not doing the things that someone you'd assume a doctor would do at school. And so I would often end up in kind of the lower sets. And so we have, I'm sure it's the same across the world, but you have science class, math class, where you have higher sets and there's a top set class, the people that they're actually studying a different curriculum to the people in the bottom set. And those in the top set are the only real students that are going to get the top grades. The people in the bottom set who are studying a different curriculum can only really aspire to get maybe a C or a B. And I was always kind of in that middle set. I was never in the top set. I was never in the bottom set, but always in the middle. So never really underperforming or overperforming, just sitting in the middle. And I was quite happy just to coast through. And it wasn't until really it got to GCSEs and A-levels that I realized that I wasn't, so GCSEs and A-levels, people who don't know, are GCSEs are the qualifications you get at 16 years old and A-levels are the qualifications you get 18 years old. And at that point, my GCSEs, when I was approaching 16, I realized that I was only really going to get a B. I couldn't get an A. There was no way really with the sets I'd been in, kind of how I'd been behaving up until that age, that there's no real way I could get those kind of grades. So for that reason, I couldn't apply, as you already mentioned, I couldn't apply for maths at A-level. I scraped by to get into sciences. And I remember a careers teacher saying, I really scraped by to get into A-level science. And then I think from 16, I tried to turn it around. I tried to work a bit harder. 16, 17, I worked harder. 17, 18, I worked harder. But I think you kind of, the cast was almost set at that point. I couldn't really get into those higher sets. I couldn't really get into the higher level curriculum. And I didn't really have a chance of applying for medicine at that age. And I looked at the grades I had, looked at the cards I was dealt, and realized that I could probably apply for biochemistry. And that's what I did. And I got in, thankfully, because that kind of opened some doors.
How are you feeling through all this process? Like, were you feeling, that's the way it is? Or were you feeling devastated that you had maybe missed out on some things you would have preferred to have achieved higher in? Or
I think I was 16 years old and I didn't really care at that point. I thought that everything was going to be all right. I didn't really, when you come out of, high school, you go straight into university, you're kind of still in that education bubble. You don't really see the real world. You kind of just think everything's going to be okay. I can stay in education for a long time. And then when I finish education, someone's going to hand me a brilliant job and I'm going to have loads of money and live a brilliant life. But it's not really how it works. And I found that quite hard when I finished my undergraduate. I thought, well, I've got this great degree in biochemistry. What can I do with it? And I looked around and I thought, well, there's not much. This is a year before I finished. And I thought I better do a master's degree and I can sort of bridge that to do a PhD if I need to. So I did a master's degree straight after. Started looking at what jobs I can apply for with a master's degree in oncology and a bachelor's degree in biochemistry. And honestly, there's not that much you can do outside of in that field with that degree. You can be a lab technician, you can be a research scientist. These are all jobs you can do. The pay isn't brilliant, really. It's pretty shocking, really, how much scientists get paid, really. And there was a lot of people with PhDs who had obviously done another 4, sometimes 5 years more education than me, and so in theory were much more qualified than me, that were applying for these same jobs. So I really had no chance. And I think that was when it really hit me that I'd gone from thinking of, oh, everything's going to be okay, to realizing, oh, wait, no, I'm not sure what I'm going to do. And I've got a qualification I can't really use, so I'm a bit stuck. And that's kind of, that was kind of a point in when I was 22 that really everything kind of hit home that, oh, God, I've actually got nowhere to go at this point. I'm going to have to just get a job like everyone else and we'll see how it goes.
And did you get a job like everyone else?
Yeah, so I kind of finished at 22, my master's degree. I thought, right, one thing I can do is get a PhD because that will be further education. It's relatively okay money. It's not brilliant. It's not bad. I can live a very comfortable life. That'll buy me an extra 3 or 4 years of time to figure out what I want to do with myself. But I couldn't find a PhD at the time. There was nothing really available. So I moved down to Bristol. I was studying in Nottingham. I moved down to Bristol to live with some friends. And I just had a look at the job market, really, because I probably left it a bit late thinking I was going to get a PhD. And then I realized that the science tech jobs I could do, which were probably paying about £21,000-£22,000, which isn't a huge amount of money. It's not bad. It's above the average wage, but it's not massive. I realized that actually a job that doesn't even require a degree working in insurance would pay more. So I just took that because it was a quick opportunity to earn more money than I could earn using my degree. So I ended up working in insurance for 2.5 years and then working in a bank for another year and a half, earning probably more than I could have earned using my degree at that point without getting onto a formal graduate scheme.
Obviously, in listening to you, money figures in your life as important to you because at the time, you're graduating, it's time to earn money. So that makes total sense. But how were you actually feeling about all this wandering around?
Not brilliant. You don't feel like you've got any kind of security in your future at this point. You mentioned money there, and that is an important thing to me. I've always felt I was quite good with money, and I've always never really had very much of it around. I think that when you go to university, and especially medical school, which I come on to, there's lots of people that have been bought houses by their parents. They get lots of money from their parents. I didn't really get an awful lot of support. My parents did really well and did everything they could for me. And they really did help when they could, but they couldn't help too much. So I was always kind of trying to work part-time while studying, always trying to look after money, never went on a holiday, always tried to kind of make the money I had last. Trying to work for a job that was going to give me financial security over necessarily something I wanted to do was probably more important to me at that point.
When was the turning point for you?
So within about a year of working this dead end job, I realized that this is not what I want to do. This is not the potential I should be really living up to. I always thought about applying to medical school, but must have been within about 6 months of moving to Bristol, starting this terrible job, that this is what I want to do. I want to apply for medicine. So I looked into it. I realized that you needed to fund it partly yourself. Fund it partly yourself. You needed lots of work experience, which is unpaid work experience. There's lots of clinical aptitude tests. You need lots of references. And I looked at it and I thought, it's all quite daunting with all the gamble that would be involved in applying, the money upfront in applying, and then actually the financial insecurity of studying. Thought it's probably not going to work. So I just carried on, didn't really think to even try applying, even though it kind of really what I wanted to do. I just kind of assumed that it wasn't for me and what I would never be able to do it, which is, looking back, that's incredibly naive. So I just kind of assumed, that's out of my reach, I can't do it. And then maybe a year or so later, a year and a half in, maybe even 2 years in, I thought, well, I'll speak to some friends who I know who might be able to get me some work experience from university, people who are studying medicine at university in my undergraduate. And they were more than happy and always very happy to try and get me work experience. So they got me some unpaid work experience, which I used my annual leave to do unpaid work experience. So that was a rough year. I then sat the UK clinical aptitude test, got the score that allowed me to apply. Even studying for that exam is horrific because there's lots of maths, and I hate maths, as I've already told you. I think that exam actually is just trying to make sure that you can use numbers when they don't actually require maths as an entry requirement. Sat that exam, that was fine. Got my work experience, managed to get references from the people that I got my unpaid work experience from. And I one day just thought, I thought, well, once I applied, I just handed in my notice, even without getting a position at medical school, and just went traveling. And then I found out halfway through traveling that I'd got a place and everything worked out okay. But it wasn't, if I didn't have that gamble of applying and deep down thinking I'd never get it, I'd probably still be in that dead end job now, to be honest.
Well, and, I think what's important to mention there is it was a dead end job for you, whereas others might have found it absolutely inspiring, the things that you were doing, but they just weren't a fit for you. And you were realizing that. I do find it interesting listening to you that your desire for security was offset by quitting and going traveling. So I'm glad you had that epiphany of, you know what, I'm just going to go travel. So was medical school, Chris, what you expected?
Yes, I'd say yes. I thought it would be hard work. I kind of anticipated it, and it was. It was really hard work. I can compare it. I'm lucky that I've done 3 degrees now. I can compare a medical degree to any other degree, so a bachelor's degree. And it's very different. The workload is so much higher. than my biochemistry degree. I can't really exaggerate that enough. Not only, well, so with a bachelor's degree, for example, they'd expect you in maybe 2 hours a day, maybe 3 hours a day sometimes, with occasionally you'd be in for 6 hours in a day. And the rest of it was all self-directed, expected to learn at home. And of course, as most students do, most students weren't learning at home. They were having fun, which I was doing from my undergraduate, most of it. But with medical degree, you're kind of expected to be in almost all day, every day, with very little time to be at home. And when you are at home, that's when you need to be doing all your self-directed learning, because there's so much to learn. And I think that I was quite fortunate because I'd already worked in a job where I kind of got used to a routine of getting up early, going to work and coming home. And so I was kind of used to having a routine. And I think without that kind of 9 to 5 mentality, I don't know how anyone survived medical school, because it is pretty ruthless.
Yeah. So tell me something. Here you are in medical school, seeing all these things you hadn't seen before, one would assume. Did you ever feel faint?
First time I saw a cadaver, yeah, it was a bit strange. I'm assuming most people will know what a cadaver is. If they don't, it's essentially the medical term for a dead body. Most medical schools, they teach their students to learn about anatomy by exploring a dead body, someone who had the capacity to say, I would like to donate my body to medical science. It doesn't feel like you're just experimenting on someone. It feels like someone has given their life for you to learn from, which is really, really a nice thing. Yeah. It was the first time I saw cadaveric tissue. I was a little bit faint. But I think the stomach took quite well. The only time I really felt faint was seeing hand surgery. I don't know why. I think it's because we look down at our hands almost all day, every day. And seeing that someone's hand being sliced into and all the tissues and tendons being pulled apart made me almost faint. So yeah, I did almost collapse once in an operating theater. But otherwise, I think I've got a pretty strong stomach.
Yeah.
But there's always something, actually, I should say, that everyone in the medical profession has something they don't like. And I have to be crude here, and I'm really sorry, but bodily fluids, pee, poo, phlegm, all these horrible phlegm, like cough, sputum, whatever you want to call it, everyone's got something that makes them feel a little bit unwell and they'd rather not have to deal with it. And for me, it's sputum. I really don't like it. It makes me feel a little bit generally makes me feel a bit uneasy. But pee and poo, no problem. But other people have different things.
So that brings me to a really good question. Your partner, Nina, is also a doctor. What is it like for both of you? I mean, do you ever stop talking shop?
We definitely, it's kind of beneficial having someone, being in a relationship with someone who's in the profession. So me and Nina met at medical school. We found that actually doctors very often all couple up together. It's really quite common to see it. And currently where I'm working, there's maybe 10 doctors over from the UK and they're all in couples. Mm-hmm. It's quite a common thing. And I think it's people do it because I think it's beneficial to have someone that you can relate to. Because mm-hmm. the job is really taxing, it's really strenuous, and it can really leave you drained mentally and physically. Mm-hmm. Working in the emergency department as well, it's every day is a different day, and mm-hmm. You can see a patient and it can really take it out of you. Mm-hmm. And if you were to go home to your partner who wasn't in the medical profession, you could tell, and you wanted to tell them about your day and tell them about this patient, it'd be really hard to explain what it was that was difficult to deal with. But with Nina, who's obviously a doctor as well, she understands I can talk jargon, that she'll understand, that she can relate to it and she can give me her experiences, or she can, it can be a jumping off point at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. Whereas, it comes with its drawbacks because we work in the same emergency department. We do all the same shifts together. So we really aren't any more than about 10, 20 meters apart from each other, which is, I think a lot of people would find very, very difficult, but um, fingers crossed, we're 7 months into this job, and we don't want to kill each other yet. So yeah, it's going okay.
Well, that's such a positive. So Chris, you have a really challenging job. How do you wind down from that? What are the things that you do that sort of remove you from that intensity?
Right now, my obsession in life is going surfing. I'm very lucky to live in a small town called Caloundra, which is on the Sunshine Coast of Queensland, Australia. It's a small town, but there are about 4 or 5 absolutely pristine beaches. And I'm currently looking at one right now, which is about, well, I could probably throw a stone to it. There are some brilliant waves, and Australia is well known for surfing. I am not a particularly good surfer. I'm not in the best of shape. So I'm very much a beginner, but I've been doing it now for about 2 months or so, and pretty obsessed with it at the moment. So I'm quite lucky I can go surfing before work. And if the day, if I get out early enough, and then the weather's nice enough, I can sometimes go surfing after work. So that definitely improves my mood and sets me up right for the day if I get to go surfing before work. But otherwise, cooking as well is something I really enjoy and something I've always enjoyed. And that's something that's great, because you can do that after work. And if you enjoy it, it's a benefit, because it's also something you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What is the most inspiring thing about being a doctor?
I think it's we're quite privileged as doctors to be able to talk to patients and different people every single day. And people will tell you about the most intimate and personal details of their life. And they'll tell you things that they would never tell anybody else. And they'll tell you these things knowing that you'll keep it in absolute confidentiality. And I guess we don't really appreciate every day just how significant that is, because we're quite lucky in that respect. We get to help people, and people trust us.
Is it just like on TV? Like, you know, if I watch a Netflix show about doctors, is that what your life is like, Chris?
Depends what show you watch. I think there's this idea that the doctor is kind of the hero. He walks in and he saves lives. Yeah, not really. It's the nurses that run the department. The nurses that have been there for years. They're the people that look after the patients, really. They're the heroes in the department. I don't think you get enough shows about nurses and how great they are. So, I think that perhaps it's not quite as it seems. Some TV shows are accurate. I'd say that House is fairly accurate, although there's a lot of kind of funny things you see as well, like the doctors doing their own MRI scans and things. That never happens. And obviously you can't talk to patients like Dr. House does. But other programs like Scrubs, for example, yeah, it's nothing like that, really.
I don't think it's trying to be anything but what it is when it comes to Scrubs. So if somebody were considering going into the medical field, what would be the advice you would give them as they're making that consideration?
Do some work experience and really talk to some people in the job and decide if it's the job you want to do. It's a really tough job mentally and physically. You have to work very long hours. You have to be able to kind of remove yourself from all kind of human emotion at times, to be able to deliver bad news, to be able to see things that will make you feel horrible as a human being. So it's emotionally stressful, mentally stressful, because you are working all the time. People are, especially in my job, the emergency department, when you've got people talking to you from all different angles at all different times, and it can be very, very, very stressful. It's a really tough job, and you really got to want to do it. So try and do some work experience, talk to people who are in the field, And I would say that's probably the best thing you can do. And if you really feel like it's a job for you, then do it, because I would highly recommend it. I wouldn't want to do anything else. Yeah.
That's great. It's great that you found your spot, the thing that you really wanted to do, because when you find that, then, you know, you can do a good job at it. Which again leads me to my next question is, obviously you will not spend the rest of your career in the emergency department. Do you have a sense of what direction you want to go?
Well, actually, I do want to spend the rest of my life in the emergency department. I absolutely love it. I think it's the best job you can do as a doctor. When I worked in, I worked in an emergency medicine, having thought, never thought I wanted to do it. It is chaotic. There's just things happening all around you. There's things beeping. There's loud noises. There's paramedics rushing people in that look like they're dying. There's people with blood pouring out of them. It's chaos, but it's brilliant. And I think I did my first 4 months in a hospital in the UK in emergency medicine, then extended it to 8 months. So I've been doing it for about a year and a half now, and I wouldn't want to do anything else. I think it's a great job.
I always thought it was a pass-through job, honestly, that you sort of did that for a period of time because it exposed you to so much, and then you sort of move into something as a specialization, but that's not the case.
Oh, it certainly is the case. I think that most training programs in the UK, people do at least 4 months of emergency medicine. And then when you come out to work in somewhere like Australia, it's really easy to get a job in the emergency department compared to any other job. So a lot of people just do it for a year. It makes you a better doctor because you get used to managing patients who are very, very unwell or challenging for other reasons. I think a lot of people don't appreciate that not only do we have to deal with people who are physically very unwell, but we have to deal with people who are very mentally very unwell. So it's a very challenging job, and a lot of people are horrified and traumatized by the end of their 4 months. But if you survive those 4 months and you still like it, then a lot of people will want to do it. And currently, in the contract I'm working, which is just over a year in the emergency department here in Queensland, I've got about, there's about 10 people I've already mentioned from the UK. I think I'm the only one out of the 10 that wants to do it. I think maybe one other possibly, but you're right. Out of those other eight or nine out of 10, they're just seeing it as a pass-through job, kind of rite of passage before they do something else.
Okay, got it. So my last question for you is, what advice would you give your younger self, that 22-year-old?
Take the gamble. Don't just assume that you won't be able to do something just because you think that you'll get turned away, you'll fail the application. I thought this through and through, that I would never be able to be a doctor, I'd never be able to get a place in medical school. I don't know why I thought that, and I can't really explain why I thought that back then. I'm not quite sure what changed, but if I could go back and tell myself anything, it would be to make that application earlier. Don't be afraid to make risks. The only thing that can happen is you can fail. And then if you fail, you can just try again. Because really, if someone like me, who never really looked like they were going to amount to a huge amount at school, can become a doctor, then really anyone can do it. So I strongly believe that anyone can do anything, really, if they put their mind to it.
So thank you. Thanks for chatting with me today and taking the time when you could be surfing before work to spend some time chatting with me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, the wind is very nice today as well. I'm not going to work for 2 hours, so I'm debating going surfing, but probably not. But it's been a pleasure. It's great to catch up with you.
Thanks, Chris. And to our viewers and listeners, thank you so much for joining Chris and me for this journey through medical background and what it's like to become a doctor. And of course, we appreciate doctors so much, and nurses, and everybody in the medical field that takes such good care of us. So thanks for watching. If you are a watcher on YouTube, thanks for listening. If you're a podcast follower, I do hope that you'll visit my website, career-resilience.com, and everything is there, all the podcasts, all the YouTube videos, and my blog as well. So thanks for joining us, and until we meet again.